and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Wednesday, June 12, 2024. An international nonprofit group working with local initiatives in Sudan calls for help.
These emergency response rooms are mutual aid groups that have been formed by local grassroots volunteers in Sudan that are providing food, health, other critical services, and are also trying to build partnerships, raising funding.
And Malawi declares 21 days of mourning after the country's vice president was killed in a plane crash Monday.
He went to attend a funeral of the former cabinet minister, but it failed to land because of weather condition.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. A U.S.-based nonprofit called Community Response Effort is working with two local Sudanese non-governmental organizations to support 11 emergency response rooms and women's response rooms across Sudan. These response rooms are locally run safe havens where people receive humanitarian assistance like food and water amid widespread hunger. Charlene Chikoto, the executive director of the community response effort, says delivering any much-needed help to families trapped in Sudan can be very challenging.
Now, looking at the context that we are currently witnessing in Sudan, which is a very grave situation where it's the largest displacement crisis in the world right now, we are looking at about 6.8 million people displaced, 25 million in need of support, 14 million of those being children, and a third of the total population is facing acute food insecurity and famine, which makes it the home of the highest number of internally displaced people in the world, yet they are receiving limited humanitarian support, far less than other countries which are in a similar situation. So as we speak today, food insecurity is high. The healthcare system is crumbled. Diseases are on the increase, including cholera and so forth. And the traditional humanitarian setup that we've been used to is overwhelmed with the situation that we have in Sudan.
Correct. And currently, there's the issue of access. The issue of access has been what international and local non-governmental organizations have been begging the belligerent forces to at least allow them to reach people who are trapped, who need help. Now, how do you do your work in that backdrop?
Yes, access is an issue, John, and this is where our local-based approach comes in. So at the start of the conflict, COR was able to identify some local organizations, NGOs that you could work with. And we started working with the local organizations together with what are called the emergency response rooms. And these emergency response rooms are mutual aid groups that have been formed by local grassroots volunteers in Sudan that are providing food, health, other critical services, and are also trying to build partnerships, raising funding, and getting recognition as a frontline humanitarian aid provider in the country. So we have been able to access the populations that are in need by working directly with the local organizations that we are partnering with, and also with the emergency response rooms who are able to reach those that are in need.
Talk to me about the current situation. We're talking about Darfur. The place has been cut off from humanitarian aid for quite a long time. There's this very serious fighting going on around the town of El Fasher. MSF and other aid agencies are trying their best to help there, but it's a very difficult situation. Talk to me about emergency response rooms in Darfur. I mean, I know that you are spread all over the country or in some parts of the country, but give us a scorecard on what is happening in Darfur.
COR has been working largely in Khartoum, with the emergency response rooms. But the emergency response rooms are not only confined in Khartoum, they are also growing in the rest of the country. And we do have emergency response rooms in Darfur. So our peers, you know, other organizations, other international NGOs, together with the local organizations, are responding in Darfur. But as you have said earlier on, we understand that access is a big issue, especially with the increase in fighting. So we understand that the situation is dire. When you look at food security, the information that we have, you know, from the various reports and from the ground, is that Darfur, Khartoum, those are among the areas that are largely affected by food security at the moment.
The U.S. Special Envoy to Sudan has always been passionate about the importance of cash assistance in conflict situation. In a country like Sudan, where the banking system has been brought to its knees by the fighting, how do you channel support?
Yes, interestingly, you know, we are still able to distribute cash in Sudan. So I can just give you a little bit of an overview of what COE has been doing. So we have been able to distribute multi-purpose cash in partnership with our local NGO organizations, as well as the emergency response rooms. And we have been working with Cashy. We've been working with the banking system that is there, the food vendors that are able to cash out. And the reason why we chose cash as a modality is it empowers the communities, those who are in need. It gives them the power to make the decisions of, you know, what exactly do they need. Because as you understand, there is a myriad of needs in Sudan at the moment. It's food, it's health, it's transport, sometimes it's even safety. So we have been able to provide cash in Khartoum. And we have also been able to provide nutrition vouchers in addition to the cash, to the households that we supported with cash, so that the pregnant women and lactating women are able to get nutritious food. So working hand in glove with the emergency response rooms to identify those in need, to register those in need, and with our financial service providers who are on the ground in Sudan, who are constantly monitoring the situation, you know, on the market to see whether there's food available to buy if we give them cash, and who are also monitoring to see whether the households can actually cash out, they can get the money. We have been able to reach the communities that are in need.
That's Charlene Chiquito, the executive director of the community response effort. She was speaking to me from Harare, Zimbabwe. In the second part of this interview, which airs tomorrow, she has a message for the international community. Still on Sudan, the UN Commission on the Prevention of Genocide says the paramilitary rapid support forces and the Sudan armed forces are targeting civilians as the two rival groups battle for the control of El Fashir town, the only stronghold of the Sudan armed forces. Intense fighting is reported in and around El Fashir town, where thousands of displaced people have taken cover. The UN Human Rights Commission The government of Malawi says the Vice President Salus Chilima will be honored with a state funeral after he was killed along with eight other people in a plane crash Monday. President Lazarus Chikwera has declared 21 days of national mourning yesterday, when the wreckage of the small military plane carrying Chilima and former First Lady was discovered in a mountainous area in the north of the country. There were no survivors. The government also clarified today that there were nine people on board when the plane crashed, not 10, as initially announced by President Chikwera. My colleague Yahes, we helped reach out to Lamek Masina, VOA reporter in Lilongwe, and he first asked him about plans for the vice president's state funeral.
The plane which the vice president, Salus Chilima, boarded, disappeared yesterday, on Monday. This was in northern Malawi, where he went to attend a funeral of the former cabinet minister. But it failed to land because of weather conditions. But so when it was returning back, that's when the aviation officials said it was not showing on the radar. And so it couldn't be traced. So the search started 2 hours later until the whole of night yesterday. But today morning, that's when the state president, Lazarus Chakwera, announced that the plane has been found. And it was found in a hill in northern Malawi, in a forest, in fact, near a hill. And it crashed. All the passengers were killed because of the impact, according to the president.
Okay, Lamek, how many people were in the plane?
The plane carried 10 people, including the vice president. But all these people were the members of the opposition, United Transformation Movement Party. It's the party which is led by the vice president.
And also, Lamek, the former first lady, Shanil Zimbiri, the ex-wife of former President Bakili Muluzi, was also on the plane.
Yes, he was on the plane. And why he was on the plane is because she is a member of Chirima's party, the UTM. So as I have already stated, they accompanied their president, their party's president to the funeral.
Now that you've mentioned the Chilima's United Transformation Movement political party, the party is actually criticizing the government response as slow and said there was no transponder on the plane. And that was concerning for an aircraft carrying a high-level delegation.
Yes, it was concerning indeed. But the issue is... because the same aircraft is the one which carried the cabinet minister who was dead. It was hours before. It was the star. Now, we don't know if even at that time it didn't have the transponder. We don't know. And the state president, even the state president, Lazarus Chakwera, has said he has been using the same aircraft in the past.
And Lamek, who is Saulos Chilima? Tell us a little about the vice president.
Saulos Chilima, according to official information, was born in 1973. He was first sworn in as the vice president of the Republic of Malawi in 2014. And later, that was the time when he was when the country was led by the late... By Peter Mutharika. And also in 2020, he became the president now when he joined in a coalition with the current vice president, Lazarus Chakwera.
And you are there. I need to know about the reaction of this tragedy on the country, both among ordinary people and also among the leadership. Talk to us a little about that.
The tragedy has come as a shock. It's something which Malawians were not expecting to happen in this way. In the videos posted in social media, many were literally crying when they heard about the news. And also, even the state president today, when he was delivering the announcement that the plane has found and all the passengers there have been killed. He was wiping tears. It's a sombre mood here in Malawi, and there's a shock all over the country.
That's VOA reporter Lamek Masina speaking with my colleague Yehia Suihu from Lilongwe. Listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, commuters are eager to see changes in bus and taxi fares in South Sudan. Find out why after the break.
Hello, listener of South Sudan in Focus. We have an exciting new segment dubbed Words of Wisdom. We want to hear your thoughtful proverbs that echo through your community. This is another chance for you to share wisdom from your roots. All you need to do is record a proverb in a language of your choice, tell us its English translation and what it means. Keep it brief, authentic, and represent your community. Your recorded proverb shall be sampled on South Sudan in Focus every Wednesday. Send your recording via our WhatsApp number, +1 202 630 8011. That is +1 202 630 8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Our words of wisdom for today comes from Eastern Equatoria State.
Good evening, VOA, South Sudan. We have a proverb in Acholi that says, "Lum orachel kawat orcheko." This literally means, if a grass touch house, out of many pieces of grasses that are touched on the house, and one of them falls off, it cannot really make the house to leak. So it means if out of many people, one person decides to stay away, the rest can still remain in unity. That's the meaning of the proverb. Thank you so much.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Amnesty International is calling for the immediate release of South Sudanese government critic Maurice Mabior Awijokbak, who has been detained for over 400 days. The rights watchdog says South Sudan's Minister of Justice, Ruben Madol Arol, cited and issued directives to the country's national security to free Bak and drop all the charges against him. Bak is believed to be held at the National Security Headquarters in Juba, also known as Blue House. My colleague Nabil Biagio spoke to Shikula Onyala, South Sudan researcher at Amnesty International, who condemns Bak's continuous detention and alleged torture.
Maurice Mabior had been in detention for over 435 days. That is from 5th February 2023. He first appeared in public on 16th April 2024 at a court in Juba, where he was charged with defamation against the Director General of National Security Service, Akol Kurkuch. He appeared again on 24th of April 2024 in the same court, and the trial judge actually said that he had already been bailed. So he did not understand why he was still being held by the NSS. Maurice Mabior's lawyer then approached the Minister of Justice to inquire on the reasons why he was still being held. We later learned through our sources that the National Security Service was still holding Maurice Mabior because they were investigating him for committing crimes against the state, which crimes were insulting the president and undermining the head of state. Of course, then the Minister of Justice correctly ordered that Maurice Mabior should be released on 10th of June because he was already facing a case of defamation. So there was no need for him to be charged again for a similar offense, or even for the investigation to happen under similar charges. And yes, he welcomed this decision.
And of course, part of that context is Maurice Mabior was an activist and government critic who was in Kenya, in Nairobi, Kenya. He disappeared from there. He was an asylum seeker, if I remember correctly, and he disappeared.
Yeah, he was an asylum seeker, who was obviously let down by the Kenyan authorities, who are alleged to have done it.
Yes, which, of course, violated international law and humanitarian law. Now, Amnesty International has documented numerous cases of arbitrary detention in South Sudan.
Yes.
What systemic changes do you believe are necessary to prevent such abuses and ensure accountability within the NSS, the National Security Service?
First of all, we are calling for the review of for the reforms of the NSS, starting with the National Security Service Act Amendment Bill that is still pending in Parliament. We made a call sometime last year that this particular agency needs to be reformed. I think the starting point is ensuring that the law is in line with both the South Sudan Constitution and the international law, international standards, that the police-like powers that the agency enjoys should be reverted back to the police, so that they just engage in intelligence. As it happens everywhere, then the police can do the other work that they do.
Yes, so, to limit their powers.
Correct. At the moment, they operate with a lot of impunity and with no form of accountability to anyone.
And also, it's not just an issue within the NSS and the laws that govern it, because the activities of the NSS, according to reports, have extended beyond South Sudan's borders. And so how can the international community and neighboring countries support efforts to protect dissidents and ensure their safety from extrajudicial actions by the NSS?
Our appeal in most of these cases, and especially in the East Africa region where we have seen the NSS extending its operations in countries like Kenya and Uganda, Khartoum was also one of the areas that we saw many South Sudanese being picked up by the NSS. We ask these countries to really respect the international law. You cannot allow someone who is seeking asylum to be taken up, and on offenses that are not extraditable, like defamation in this case. So we are urging them to protect these people. We want due process to be followed.
And part of this urgent call or appeal you're making is the conditions in which he's been detained. Tell us, what have you learned from speaking to his lawyer and maybe other sources?
Yeah, well, what we gathered so far is that in the very first 3 months when he was arrested arbitrarily, his condition of detention amounted to what we would consider as torture and ill treatment, and this is why we say so. In the first 3 months, he was in solitary confinement in a very small blue house. He was not given sufficient food. He was given food once, a small portion that was not sufficient for him. He was not allowed to mingle with other inmates. He was allowed outside only once. He was not given medical attention, even though he needed it. He was not allowed to see his family. He was not allowed access to any lawyer, and he was also not allowed to, he didn't have access, you know, to the outside world as he would have been expected. And he was kept away from the public, like nobody knew exactly where he was. And then, of course, the failure to present him before a court of law also actually violates the international law that requires an arrested person to be presented before a court of law sooner. But in his case, he was kept for too long.
That was Shikula Onyala, South Sudan researcher with Amnesty International. He was speaking with my colleague Nabil Biejo from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi, earlier today. From Kenya, we move to South Sudan, where two oil companies, in collaboration with the National Ministry of Finance and Ministry of Trade and Industry, purchased around 100 trucks full of fuel to help push down prices of fuel across the country. The chairperson of the South Sudan Federation of Bus and Transporters Union say they are not sure if the fuel purchased will change the country's economic situation. Dennis Longonyi has more for VOA from Juba.
Motorists in South Sudan's capital, Juba, have welcomed the arrival of the fuel consignment after experiencing higher prices at the pump. James Deng, a manager of the National Oil and Gas, a subsidiary of Sud Petroleum, says more than 30 trucks have arrived in Juba.
Through our able partnership, we were able to rescue the situation and avert further distress to our already struggling economy. It is with great honor that today I am proud to announce the plugging of the first batch of 35 trucks from a total of 100 trucks supported by the Ministry of Trade initiated for essential commodities measures. This fuel will be sold at a subsidized price to ease the burden on our citizens.
Jacob Lueth, chairperson of the South Sudan Federation of Bus and Truck Transporters Union, accuses the government-owned Nile Petroleum Company of running cartels who store drums of fuel on the black market.
only people who are being supported by NALPET, given 2 drums, 3 drums, even 4 drums, they are the ones who are coming to sell that fuel for us. So we become source of the market.
Chandil, a driver who ferries passengers on the Baragazel Road Highway, says passengers have been resisting fare increase.
Now fuel is too expensive. A jerrican is 86,000 SSP and 80,000 SSP in black market. If I power 7 or 10 jerricans, I won't have a benefit. We then talk to our office to increase the prices so that we can have a profit. The problem is the fuel. We ask why. They say dollars are high. Now the dollar is 300,000 to 320,000 SSP. Engine oil was 12,000. Now it's 24,000.
Kurngor, manager of the Pacific Petroleum Company in Juba, says he has been providing fuel at lower prices. Ngor says the price of fuel will continue to be affordable at his 6 petrol stations in Juba.
The main idea, we want to ensure that we have product availability. You have this storage, as you can see, we have enough fuel, and we also have some trucks are also on the way coming. So I don't think that we'll have a fuel shortage in the market. When we started this project, we started selling at 2,300, and then later on we increased the price to 2,700, and now it is 2,900.
Lawmakers at the National Legislative Assembly summoned the Ministry of Finance and Trade to explain the root cause of price hikes in the capital. Jacqueline Nyibol, a member of parliament and representative of the economic cluster, says lawmakers are working to address the economic hardship of consumers.
We initiated that our companies, the national companies, must be supported to make sure that the market is stabilized. We don't force the market to come down by any other means. It is by only the two forces of the demand and supply. That is how we can force the market to come down. And we need to understand this in a very wider way. And the government must intervene. There's nothing called free economy. No, to me, no.
South Sudan and oil-producing country still struggles to provide fuel to its citizens. Pump stations in Juba charge 4,000 SSP per litre of petrol. For VOA News, I'm Dennis Logonye reporting from Juba.
That's all. We worked very hard for you this Wednesday, June 12, 2024. We now leave you with the song Salam by Lomerica Jazz Band. Listening to Lomerica Jazz Band and the song Salam, which means peace. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Opori, and engineer, Bill Bass, we wish you a lovely evening. Remember to join us again tomorrow evening for another exciting edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Salam. Yeah.